You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Making Waves.
Anyway, guys, welcome to Making Waves, the Shiprock Podcast. And literally, we are the Shiprock Podcast tonight. And we're super stoked to have our first, traveling podcast with our friends here in Afterlife. Please, everyone, welcome Andrew and Tyler from Afterlife.
I feel like the first time that I can, I'm not the only person that could clap.
I'm gonna fucking clap. Yeah.
Usually it's just my small clap on
the Jesus, these guys are up at 12:30 at night to entertain everyone. So yeah, definitely.
It's 12:40.
Yeah, we figured you guys were up for it. Anyway,
You literally are up for it.
Here we are. Yeah.
You guys are basically working off the back of a new album, Part of Me.
Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah. It's been doing very, very well. And I tell you, first off, personally, we were stoked to get you guys for this. I know it was a quick turnaround for you cats, and you guys became available. And really, a lot of it was just, we were talking earlier about the forum for Shiprockers. They dropped your name a lot.
It's crazy. Like, when we got the offer for it, I was like, damn, this came out of nowhere. And then, you know, we were kind of like teasing it within our fan pages and our socials, and people were like, it's got to be Shiprock. So then when it came out that we were going to be on Shiprock, people just lost it. And everyone's like, you got to get in the Shiprock forum. So for like the past like 6 days, I've been in there. And it's just been like, every post has been insane. It's just been nuts.
Yeah, the forum tends to be a little bit of a thunderdome from time to time.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, generally, it's been a lot. There's a lot of love in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it's a lot of information, too.
It is.
You know, in general, for new bands. When I first did the Shiprock cruise with my old band Wilson, that's the same thing that they says. If you want to get involved and learn things about what the ship is, get in there and then you figure it all out. And like,
yeah, everyone's saying, if you're looking for like what to do, what to eat, who to meet, it's like, I don't even mean that for the rhyme, holy shit. But like, you'll meet the people in there, and you know, I've been updating every day, people like where we'll be at, if they want to come see the band, like informal meet and greet, whatever it is, like we're making ourselves very accessible to everyone and everyone. So it's like, it's great. Yeah.
It also helps that none of us have ever been on a cruise either, so we don't experience
it.
Never.
No, this is our first time.
People from Florida go to the mountains when we go on vacation.
There you go.
We don't go on a cruise. We live there.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. I was going to make it. It's like, you can never go on another cruise. You can never go. The girl goes, hey, let's go on a cruise. I'm like, does it have music and like drinking and a lot of fucking crazy shit? No, I'm not going.
You've already seen some crazy shit. 2 days in, I've seen some insane crap on this one.
And you guys are from West Palm?
Yes. Yeah, West Palm Beach.
So like you're there. You see the port tourist.
Oh, dude, we see the Florida. We see the Florida man every day.
Where we live is really popular for like yacht charters and stuff. So every year people come over from South Africa and work on all the yachts.
Does Michael McDonald come?
Who?
He's the king of yacht rock. Michael McDonald. Does he ever come?
No.
Michael McDonald. 7 years. You guys, some people would see you as a relatively new band, but you guys have been around for about 7 years, right?
We started the tail end of 2017, so about 4 years.
Okay, 4 years. And you guys have kind of been slowly building this following, and now you drop. Obviously, Breaking Point came out, and that kind of got you on the map. And obviously, Part of Me now is really taking off. Thank you. Oh my goodness, Lord. Gracious! Look at
shots
that.
Are rolling.
And because it's Shiprock, I'm bringing you some liquor.
Everybody, say thank you to Al.
Thank you, Al.
Thank you, Al.
Thanks, buddy. Shiprock Al, by the way, guys, is our he's the engineer of. No, he's not the engineer. Zito's the engineer. Jesus Christ! I haven't even tried it. He's the show producer.
He's a drink bringer.
He's the drink bringer and show producer. So, Al, thank you very much. But back to you guys. So, Part of Me's out. And the single off it really, it took fire.
It was crazy. Like,
yeah.
So, when we were working on that song in the studio, I was like, man, I just felt something about that song. Before it even came out, I was like, this is going to be I think our defining song. Like, I think every band yeah. has one. And I think when it came out, it peaked at like number 4 on the radio charts. So like, I was like, I don't even understand. Like, it's a continuation of a story from a song called Broken Home. And it was cool to like wrap the song up in that way. And then for people to receive it in the way that it did, it's just nuts.
Yeah. Can I go back to an earlier song? You guys Burn It Down.
Absolutely.
Yes.
No, I want to ask something. Being someone, I grew up in the new wave age. Yeah. I don't know how that, if that influenced you guys at all, because, and I always just make comparisons so people can have a reference point. Yeah. It's like, I hear the intro of that song. Remember that being Orgy?
Yeah.
Or even some Nine Inch Nails, maybe a little
Nine
Manson.
Nine Inch Nails yeah. more.
Manson so some too. Was yeah. that an influence in some of that song? Because I know it, this song kind of swerves into other sounds yeah. and things like that. But was that any kind of influence on you guys at all?
With Burn It Down, we did reference a lot of like Nine Inch Nails. I love Trent Reznor, and I
of
love
course.
Like the digital. I'm sorry, I love like the digital feeling of a lot of the stuff they mm-hmm. do. So when we were writing that song, we wanted to try to bring in all these different elements. Mick Gordon, he designed the Doom soundtrack.
Oh wow!
For the video game, and we love that stuff. So like we wanted to incorporate that with like the production, the electronics, like the style of vocals on it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you could say that was a huge influence for that one.
Yeah, there's some real soundscapes going on there.
Yeah, that yeah. song was actually, we designed it in the way of like an EDM song.
Mm-hmm.
So like it would have the ebbs and flows, it would have the build up to the drops, and then have the drops are so heavy. And it's like, it just, everyone loves that one.
Yeah. Are you guys gamers? Like in general, like in your real, in your outside of the band life?
I play Apex and Halo.
Okay.
And I'll play Madden too, but that's about it.
I used to be big into like Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
Okay. And all those games. I'm so mad I never got a sequel.
Jesus Christ.
Because the, what you're...
I play pinball, so that's all I...
Pinball?
Yeah. Well,
in this music conversation we're having right now about the specific track, like you said, is written in to fit that space very well.
Yeah.
And I don't know if... I didn't know if that was because you are in that space or...
Well, when we went to do the record, I just finished playing Doom, the new one that came out. Like, I played the whole thing, and Mick Gordon is... godly
yeah.
on that game.
So all analog
we brought that to the studio, and we were like, listen, we need to make a song that sounds like this video. It's for the production for the heavier songs on this record. And,
just thinking about straight
literally
up
from death. Playing that video
team game. Kills the entire
yeah,
time.
killing 500 people in one game.
Yeah. And it's cool that like I think everybody's played 007 Goldeneye
yeah.
on the N64. So I feel like the soundtrack for that game was so ahead of its time.
100%.
So we took elements of that too to like it was the music always felt so suspenseful and just like very it kind of like sat in the back of my head, and like that's what there's a lot of influences on that new record that come from like the video game world.
Yeah, I mean there's a whole that space if I can kind of comment on it, that space seems like you guys would fit musically very well in. And yeah. If you weren't crafting it with the idea of like, we're playing video games, and you've done a very good job by not playing video games and yeah. creating a record that could fucking smash in any one of those games.
I would love for it to be like, be either like any of our songs be put into a video game or to be like contracted to like write a song for a video game. Like, I feel like that'd yeah. be so cool.
Yeah, very
so
cool.
So there's one of our songs, Envy, on the new record, the second verse in it, we always say that it sounds like the Call of Duty loading screen, which is like, I don't know, we just love that because it sounds like what's the first one, Modern Warfare or whatever, that one?
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like the loading screen when you're waiting to start the game.
Like the jacked up music.
These guys are like a Twitch dream.
Literally.
I think it like stems from like me playing video games younger, like the Tony Hawk games had the best soundtracks ever.
Yeah.
Like all the Tony Hawk games, the BMX games, like the ATV games, like they've all had like amazing.
You want that
sounds.
Pennywise? You want you know? I played the fucking physical game when it first came out in yeah. the arcade games. It was every fucking day.
Where you stand on the actual skateboard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's definitely
that
awesome.
Pennywise song came on. I was like out of my
or the,
fucking
the Superman
mind.
Superman song,
dude.
All
anything.
Goldfinger. The second that comes on.
It's like those, like, they played such, like, a pivotal role in, like, me growing up. Like, it's kind of cool to see how, like, we didn't plan for it that way, but it played out that way anyway.
Yeah,
even, like, the early
culture.
Madden games were like that. Like, I found out about AFI on Madden because they were on one of the soundtracks. Leaving Song Part 2 was on one of them. I found out about Yellow Card on one of those games because yeah. they had Sights and Sounds on it. So it's like... Yeah.
It's crazy to think about it. Just we were talking the other day on one of our, I forget which episode it was, but like how much those games kind of like lifted the veil of like what our music tastes were in that specific. I don't know how old you guys are, but I'm 38.
29.
So 30.
So you still are in this space where like it's, you're in the space where it's more relevant than even it was in my, Tony Hawk was the first game I can remember the soundtrack for.
You know? Oh, for sure.
So I don't know if you have any of those, Justin.
No, they really never soundtracked the Pong or Frogger. Yeah, it was just like this fucking
beep.
Yeah, like, yeah, but it's interesting to hear a band. If someone came up, and obviously people can sense what some of your influences musically, but a lot of it seems to be you kind of base a lot of your influences off more cinematic.
Yes.
Like, it's things that make us feel. Like, yeah. I know it sounds super cliche, but like I'm so influenced by the way like things make me feel. Like one of my favorite rappers is an artist called NF.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of his movies, or I'm sorry, a lot of his songs feel like as if they could be in movies. Mm-hmm. They're produced by like cinematic style production pieces. And it just, you can have a good song, but if it doesn't make you feel anything, what is the point?
It's funny how you mentioned you kind of crafted this one song, like almost an EDM type song, right?
Yeah, Burn It Down.
Burn It Down. It's just kind of like, which makes it really interesting because a DJ now can take that and actually make it into something like that, right?
So funny that you say that.
Your crossover.
We've been trying
right
to
there.
Find the right one to do it for.
And
a
did
very
you find one?
I was actually, I don't know if I can say his name or not, but
is this Cell Dweller? Because that's
no,
what
dude.
Me.
Oh my! God.
I know him.
I would love that.
Let me send your stems over to him.
Do you know who that is?
Yeah, he lives in Michigan.
Absolutely.
You got to watch that. You got to listen to him. But there's a DJ did hit me up, and he was asking about like the stems for Burn It Down specifically. My friend Zoe, she's a DJ in the UK for like BBC Radio 1, and she wanted to do it, just never got around to it. But like, it's cool that like it's being like picked up by other DJs to see how they can like remix it and stuff like that. It's
so aside from video games growing up, at what point in your life you go, you know what, I think I want to be a musician?
I'll tell you the exact point. Fourth grade, going to a field trip in one of my friend's parents' cars. They put on Hybrid Theory, and from that moment forward, I knew that I needed to be in a band.
That was the coolest answer. I mean, regardless of, it was so quick.
I know
knew
the
it.
Exact.
I don't
think
it was so detailed.
I know the exact.
I'm not wasting any time.
We were going to Wanadu City. I remember. I remember.
Where might that be for people who are having a geographic
it's
issue?
Like a Wanadu City is like a fake city you go to when you're in elementary school and you like get a job like a police officer or like a mayor or something.
Wait,
it's like a little tiny city.
I thought it was Pig's Knuckle, Arkansas, but
it's like a little tiny city inside of like a mall and like you get like a job. It's like the field trip everyone goes to in elementary school if you're in South Florida.
Do they keep going back to it every day? Like you have a job now?
No, just one time. Okay. One day.
They're paying you in snacks.
Basically, you get like credits and you can go buy like pizza or something.
It's a parent's wet dream. That's amazing. Okay.
That's a definitely better answer than mine.
What's yours?
Oh, man. So up until probably like 17, I really didn't listen to like a lot of music. And it's weird.
That is weird.
So the first band that I ever listened to that was like heavy was Norma Jean.
Okay.
So that's what I know. It's crazy. It was 68 it was like, on the boat. Yeah. Like it gets even crazier. We actually toured with Norma Jean.
Back when it was.
Was in 2019, so I think this was after. And it was cool to finally get to tour with them, being one of the bands that like got me into heavy music. And I remember hearing, it was the Shotgun Message was the name of the song. I remember hearing this thing and it was like, this is the craziest shit I've ever heard. Like, I don't even know. This is insane. It makes me feel something I've never felt. I had to be, like, 17. I'm not sure what it was. But, like, I remember listening to that, and I was like, all right, I got to figure what this is. Looked into it, and I was like, all right, I got to be in a band. But I didn't become, like, a singer up until, like, so he was in another band at the time, and their singer was late for her show, and he couldn't make it. So they were like, do you want to fill in? Like, I had no experience, nothing. Did the show. The crowd ended up liking it more than their actual singer. And
he showed up.
And he showed up mid-set and was like,
and everyone's
I'm
like,
out. I quit.
Everyone's like, dude, he's so much better than him.
I swear to God, that's the fucking premise of the movie Rockstar right there.
Yeah, and I just...
That's literally what happened, though.
That's literally what fucking happened.
He walked into the room and he saw some other guy he doesn't know just doing his thing.
I'm taking my mic and this is my mic stand.
Literally. It was a venue called the Talent Farm in like South Florida. I think it was like Miami or wherever it was, Pembroke Pines. And that was it. And then, you know, we did that band for a few years and we did some cool stuff, cool tours, but then we realized like it wasn't going anywhere. I could say that. It was just not going anywhere.
So the two of you were in that band for a few
years. And our drummer too.
Oh, okay.
The faith to have this guy who hadn't sang, didn't have a voice yet.
We had no choice.
Really?
It was like, okay,
you just grab someone out of the crowd and go, hey, dude, could you sing
honestly,
this?
I'll tell you how it happened.
At that point, anyone could have been
okay.
Me.
When we were playing the show, our vocalist got stuck. There was a gas leak and they shut down the whole road that goes to the venue. And there's only one road that goes to Talent Farm. So he called us and told us this, and it was like 5 minutes before we were going to, or 20 minutes before we were going to play. And he's been to every show we ever played at that point. Mm-hmm. He does leave out the fact that he was a big fan of the band.
I was going to say,
it wasn't just like, I was a huge fan. And he came up because he already knew all the songs and he just killed it. And then he walked in halfway through our set, our other vocalist, and he was like, yeah, fuck this, I'm done.
That's kudos to you. Yeah. Not only for being like, that's like my wet dream when I was a kid to be like, if they need a fucking vocalist,
please, I'm ready.
I know every word.
And then we threw him in a studio 3 weeks later to record a full length. So he went from never screaming in a band ever to going directly into
basically
the studio.
Barking. Yeah. It was probably the most band thing ever.
Yeah.
It's like, very just band. Went out and did it. I wasn't sitting there thinking about it. I was just having fun.
Yeah, there wasn't a,
this.
Like a,
what
there
was this? How many like years ago?
Control group and some management company.
That was in like 2011.
Yeah, maybe.
So you guys on a
whim.
We've
been friends for 15 years.
Oh, that's great.
We were friends well before that even happened, but
not because of the music.
No, just from mutual friends.
So he's a fan of your band, be outside and a friend of you at this time.
It's funny how that works out.
Yeah,
that's amazing. I think that's the first time I've ever.
We also lived together.
And you, wait, how old? 15 years ago? Were you 14?
No.
Oh. Like, I'm so sorry. What happened?
Damn, Florida is progressive.
Yeah, dude, we're just kicking it at 14. Five bedroom mansion.
Hey, I'm going to take cheers, guys. Thanks for doing this and staying up and having fun and joining us. So, cheers. Salute.
I went and should have grabbed that the beer.
I have a question about something maybe a little. When you write, we talked about when you're writing, right? In your recording specifically, things change.
Yeah,
you know, we've been in that space where you've been either with a producer or just the band in general, being like, "Dude, this kind of sucks when we do it on this."
Yeah, 100%.
What is your inner dialogue like? At specifically you two, for 15 years being friends, I need to know.
Normally,
this
man's like, "Bro, what are you thinking?"
Like the tough love mantra, I guess, is the best thing you could say. But our producer we work with, Zach Jones, he is like a god. There's probably five bands on this cruise that have worked with him right now.
Veil of Maya,
Oxymorons, a few other ones. He's a prodigy in the world. He's so young and actually hitting it off now. You know, is like our best friend. So he gives it to us real. He doesn't give us the producer like, oh yeah, dude, it sounds good. I'm getting paid X amount of money. I don't give a fuck anyways. He gives us the real shit, so he'll be like, to him, if he writes a line he doesn't like, he'd be like, dude, that's fucking terrible. You need to go and figure it out. And he'll get mad, and then
I'm the guy,
and then he'll figure out something better.
Overthink everything, every single take.
Oh, he'll ask me like,
this musical allows me to write the best songs I can.
And if you're open with yourself, then I'm assuming Zach and the team that are talking to you, even if you get like a little butthurt at the moment, you're open to suggestions, and that's hard. I'm just thinking about the 15 year of friendship, you're living together, all this crazy shit.
Escape him. He's just there all the time.
It's a weird dynamic when somebody that you love like skin and bones, like a brother, tells you that you're doing something that they don't like, and vice versa. Yeah. And
like when he doesn't do the dishes.
Well, yeah,
I'm like, bro, what is all this shit?
And then you go to the studio and you just take it out. Yeah. Oh my god.
I find it quite ironic, though, that you guys like overthink when you're.
I think it's a no-brainer.
We turned him into a monster, but we also have a theory that he's an alien. So that's
definitely.
I'm not of this earth.
He's got a Blade Runner kind of vibe, right?
Okay, when you guys see him at the pool, walking around the pool in this outfit.
Yeah, someone's like, "Why aren't you in a bathing suit?" I'm like,
"It's because his skin can't be seen by the sun." I'm
that's right.
Oh my god, translucent. I'm in costume 24/7. I sleep
at
in this
home. Just like
he sleeps in that outfit.
You'd be surprised. Like
he
that's
sleeps
why
in
like,
that outfit standing up in his.
There's
costume.
They have the Spellbound night. Everyone's like, "Oh man, I love your costume." I was like, "What? This is like just not what I wear."
Yeah.
Somebody said that to you?
Yeah, people think I'm Draco Malfoy everywhere I go.
We actually went to a Harry Potter event at the bar that we hang out with at home. Like, literally the week before we came. Come
back. Spin back on it. You went to what? And where?
This bar that we go to at home, they were throwing, like, a Harry Potter ball.
The Yule Ball.
The Yule Ball or whatever. Okay. Like, and he was there literally dressed normal, and everyone's dressed up, and they're like, you have the best costume here. And he's like, I'm wearing my normal clothes.
Man, I really do enjoy that.
Should you get a gift certificate or something? Like, you win.
Yeah, they said that, like, they were giving out, like, they had all these, like, different, like, Harry Potter-themed drinks, and, like, I'm a huge Harry Potter fan, so, like, I was just there because, like, I love this shit, and everyone just, it was nuts. It was, like, my people.
You were like, oh, you felt at home.
Yeah.
The alien came back to the
alien
moon base.
Came home. They dropped me off for the weekend, and I went out, and I did it.
So was 2021 a pretty pivotal year for you guys? You're doing some of the big festivals. I mean, what was that like? What was your, because the ascension, the trajectory went for you guys.
2021 was, in the beginning of the year, it was very scary. Mm-hmm. As for, I feel like for anyone, it was yeah. like any career path was, you know, kind of in like the balance. Like no one really knew what was going on. But we were pushing through, like we finished our record and it was like slated for release. So we knew those coming months were like very important to kind of build the rollout and get all that for it. And then once the record came out, it kind of just was like on autopilot in a sense. Mm-hmm. Like we were still very much involved, but like we saw the record kind of like building the momentum that we needed and like the social media and everything. It was just slowly building. And we kind of felt like we did something right there. And then like now fast forward to 2022, we're on a fucking cruise ship in the middle of the ocean playing music. So it's like it's crazy to look back
in the middle of the ocean right now,
because there were so many times where I would like stress on something and like think, am I doing this right, is this designed correctly? And now like in retrospect it's like, why was I even worrying about this? It all worked out.
Yeah.
So 2021 was I think the year that we realized that like what we have is like very special, not only for us as like the band and musicians, but to our like our fans.
Yeah.
Like I met a ton of people on this boat that have never seen the band and have been wanting to see the band for years. They finally get to see the band, and it's like, it was like a well payoff. Mm. Like they weren't disappointed. And to me, that's like the best thing, because I would hate to disappoint someone waiting for years. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, what you guys are on the come up. I mean, you've been doing it for a while, but like you know, this national come up of putting out all this music in such a strange spot.
It's scary putting out music.
You kind of won. You know, in general, it's not a competition, but the idea with your in yourselves, like you're putting out songs, they're connecting. Here you are on a ship. You're doing festivals. You're playing shows. Most bands didn't even have the opportunity to do any of that this year.
I was literally saying it earlier. I was like, how crazy is it that I don't know who it was. I was just here earlier. I was like, that we have the opportunity to come on a cruise that's also a festival, that's also like a reunion of friends and family. It's hard to believe, and I feel like it's not gonna hit me till I'm off the boat. I'm like, fuck, I wish I was back on the boat. You know,
you are, because your legs are gonna be like,
that's what everyone says. Yeah, once you hit the land again, you're just like stomping around. But it's, I don't know, it's like an honor to be here, and I know it's nuts.
It's a weird kind of thing to wrap your head around at first, like. Cruise music festival. What are we doing? What is this? Because we're used to land based items, and then you come on here and you're like, it makes for fucking sense.
Yeah, I have like a balcony.
The boat almost got me during the first set. I'll tell you that.
Oh, dude, listen.
The boat almost conquered me during our first set. Yeah, I was spinning around, and the boat went like this, and I went like this.
You're in the aft lounge, so you're in that part of the boat that moves. If the boat's gonna move, that's who feels it.
Like, oh, I've been noticing the move as I'm sitting on the chair right
it's,
here.
It's the only thing that I can, in the pauses that I can focus on. I'm like, oh my God, am I dying?
Okay, no. It's the closest thing I can imagine to an earthquake. I went through one earthquake when I was in California, when I was living there, and I was laying on my couch, and I'm like, I was doing this, and I was like, wait, I'm not doing this myself. And then realized it was in a fucking earthquake. So this is very similar to that.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is anything about the cruise, but it's made me have to pee so much. The whole day, I have to go to the bathroom every 10 minutes.
It's probably insane. From the alcohol.
It's also a good thing,
probably. I feel like it's the boat. I've never liked
that. It's one continuous waterfall that you have to stare at and make
it's shaking you. Yeah. Like, I woke up this morning.
Like, I'll go outside and I'm like, I gotta go to the bathroom now.
I woke up this morning and like, I looked out the window and completely forgot I was on a boat.
Yeah.
Completely forgot. I looked down the ocean. I was like, holy shit, this is real. It's like a dream the first night.
The sun is just kissing the water. You're like, where the fuck am I?
Where? I have no idea. You couldn't. If there was $1 million in line, I could not tell you where I'm at right now.
I can't tell you which way is east, south, whatever. I can't tell you right now at all.
I tried to, but my internet plan wasn't working correctly.
You got to upgrade.
You should have got the $90 plan.
I did.
Watch, there'll be $115 one next week.
And like, they're going to be like, oh,
that's
the last
shout out to guest service.
$200 plan.
Yeah, it's the one.
Comes with a gig of internet speed.
I love this thing that's been like watching over me all the last 2 days.
Oh, Scully,
it's ensuring that you're rocking.
Yes,
I saw
the Rock King,
the actual moving one, the guy in the costume.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I walked in the elevator and I was like, this is crazy. Like, this is
okay. I got to get
literally in the elevator on myself.
But it's kind of like you're in a living video game.
Yeah.
There's the character fucking right there.
It's like the Iron Maiden.
It made me think of Halloween Horror Nights. We're huge Horror Nights fans. We go every year and. That's what I thought when he walked out. I was like, oh, it's Jack. The leader of Halloween Horror Nights, the icon.
Nightmare Before Christmas Jack?
No, well, it's Jack is the clown that they do in Universal, and he's like the leader of it. And that guy is the leader of the show.
Okay, let's
I forgot about Florida there for a second. I'm like, okay, where's this at? Oh, yeah, they're in fucking
Florida.
All right,
so let's pivot on that then. So, horror, what's your favorite horror movie?
My favorite
Which
horror
one
movie?
Affected you the most? How about that?
I'll tell you the one that affected me the most is Darkness Falls. My dad showed that to me when I was 9 years old. And
fuck your dad.
Or I was like 8 years old and I still had a few teeth that were falling out or whatever. I don't know when it was, but I literally took those teeth and threw them away. I didn't put them under my pillow because I thought the tooth fairy was going to kill me.
You did?
Are you joking?
Is that the premise of the movie?
I threw them away.
Is the premise of the movie about tooth fairy?
Yeah, it's about like the tooth fairies coming after the kid in the hospital that he's in.
Okay.
And
sounds fucking terrifying.
Yeah. Strange why I said fuck his dad.
My favorite one though is Insidious. I love the soundtrack. That's like my favorite horror movie.
That movie because the soundtrack.
I mean,
makes it insane. It's the coolest. It's the coolest horror movie soundtrack ever. Like the score is just perfect. Like
you should listen to Goblin if you don't know who the man Goblin
is. So our friend. Our friend from home, who's a promoter, he has nothing to do with the touring world. He TM'd the live performance of that movie.
The Dario Argento stuff, all that stuff.
Yeah, for the Suspiria movie. So I guess the TM like got sick or something, and he went out and did 6 days with them.
I wonder if
and
he did
TM'd that tour.
That's funny.
That's
great.
Funny. That's weird.
He filled up my hotel. Tyler,
what sends you under the covers, man?
That movie, Strangers.
Which one is
it? The Strangers.
Okay, yeah.
So
is that the one
where they break
in the house and they kill them? They kill them for just because they were bored.
That's right.
I think the scariest movies are the most realistic ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Like because it can happen in real life.
Hereditary got me recently. That was a good one. I had to sleep with the lights on for a couple of days. With that
movie. What was that movie that we just watched where the lady in the back of the head? It's a Malignant.
Oh, yeah.
That shit was terrifying.
That movie was terrible until the last 30 minutes, and then it was amazing.
I also love, like, old-school slasher films.
Yeah.
We did a tour with Ice Nine Kills.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, their singer, Spencer, is a serial killer.
Yeah.
100%. He knows too much about movies. It's insane how much knowledge he has.
This inner monologue that will sometimes come out when you're around him.
Mm.
And, like, we were talking about something, and he's like, I killed my girlfriend, hit her in my backyard. Do you guys want to get a drink? And, like, it was nothing. Like, you just said that to us, and I was like,
And then he gave a suggest kidding after that.
Yeah.
So it's like, those, like Friday the 13th and, like, Freddy Krueger, like, those old school.
I can't wait until they put him in a movie. You know it's coming. He's definitely going
to
be in a horror
movie. Yeah. His agent's working in there. Right?
He's got to be.
It has to
be. He's got to be in a horror movie. He's too good at it.
Yeah.
Their whole new album is basically just a visual representation of a horror movie.
Yeah.
All the music videos are crazy.
My friend and I did their live stream, the I think they call it like the kill stream or whatever it was.
Yeah, the Palladium.
Yeah. Well, that was pre-recorded. We did all of the like storyline based stuff in between all, you know, and hired a couple different actors to come in and do the whole Zoom interview. Yeah. And that entire process, the words that you just said about him being like, I just killed my girlfriend, put her in the river, want to go get a drink. That was the exact same vibe that we got. Like every cut, I was like,
he's a scary dude, but he's like,
he's really good at
a
it.
Nice guy too. Yeah.
I can't wait to see it happen because you know it's coming.
So you guys like the old school thrashers then, slashers, I should say.
So I've seen a lot of people talk about the new Scream movie.
It's out. Yeah. I heard it's good from some people, but horror fans that I know have been saying it's terrible.
It's like the Halloween.
It's like worse than the Halloween I heard. Yeah.
So there's a scene in the new Halloween movie where they're fighting Michael Myers in the street and like he's like dodging bullets and like all this crazy shit. I'm like, this is like, it's awful.
Yeah.
That's too
much. Hellraiser's cool though.
I love the old slashers. I like that slasher show on Netflix where they like, they do every season like to be super overly gory and stuff. That show's really fucking cool. And then there's three movies they put on Netflix. Fear Street were fucking amazing.
Gruesome. I didn't expect them to be as violent as they were.
I had to rewatch it to understand exactly.
Put like this girl through like a bread cutter.
Yeah.
Oh my god. And it was insane. Yeah, I remember that. It was like they didn't stay away from the violence.
It's interesting to be just repulsed by that, but then you go, someone came up with this.
Yeah.
Someone
wrote it on a piece of paper.
Those are the people you gotta watch. Yeah. Yeah. You gotta watch the directors of these movies. Eli Roth. You're coming up with this shit. Like, come on.
That is the worst.
Yeah.
He did that?
No. Eli Roth. Talking about people who come up with crazy fucked up shit. Yeah. That guy. Someone's got to check him out because he...
Cabin Fever.
Literally, like coming up with like the whole
The Red Mark.
Is, like, oh, just, dear Lord.
Well, I mean, that's a lot really just about dealing with the red market. I mean, which is a real thing in Serbia. So where, you know... You
can, I don't want to go there. Check that out. The list.
I was I don't once know, married they, to a woman from Serbia and it is 100%.
They're going to route you through there just now.
Oh, God. Yeah, we're going to get an offer next week. Hey, do you guys want to do one show in Serbia?
Just one.
Yeah, we don't know where the venue's at. We don't know what's going on.
Yeah, you guys are actually playing at a hostel.
You got 100% of the guarantee in advance.
They just want you to
You won't be using it.
Yeah. Jesus. We'll be getting it back by the time you get here.
Right. All right, so fast forward to this year. Obviously, this year begins here, but what are the plans right now? We can't really plan anything. We don't know how the hell's going on in the world, but what are your hopes for 2022?
Well, we have a few festivals locked in already. Mm-hmm. That'd be amazing. And we did Rockville last year. We headlined the Twitch stage on the pre-party night. We watched it.
I saw your show, actually.
It was an amazing set. It was so welcoming, and it was a good time. So we got invited back this year, so we're doing that. We have a few other ones that aren't announced yet that we have locked in already. And then we're just ready to get back to regular touring.
Because in 2019, we went to 19 countries pre-COVID in our first year on Breaking Point.
Wait, hold up. 19?
Yeah.
Can you name them all?
Between, almost the entire U.S., every playable place in Canada, and we did a month long tour, two separate tours in Europe and the UK.
Oh shit! Okay,
all on our first record.
That's were you really in support great. Or were you just out?
We were supporting.
Support. Okay,
and it was nuts. Like I did not expect. It was straight nonstop touring. Mm-hmm. We had a couple weeks off in between, and to see that kind of stuff happen like on our first album.
Did you like that grind?
It was amazing.
Yeah,
100%.
We got really lucky with our grind that year because it was like a month on, a month off, a month on, a month off. So we weren't like one of the bands that got stuck on like 5 months straight of touring where you have like 4 days off and we had like a month
off.
It was very manageable and made it a lot more enjoyable, I would say.
It was also our first time a lot of places, like our UK Europe tour, first time there ever.
Yeah.
So like
as people in general.
In general, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
incredibly weird. What did you tour in? Do you have a Sprinter van?
We had a built-out Sprinter with six bunks and like a front little lounge.
Do you guys drive yourself or you have
a driver? No, we had a driver and he was the best person we've ever met in our
life. Made touring the U.S. 10 times worse.
Yeah. Our front of house is sitting right over there and her best friend Sarah. Was our driver.
Hi, Sarah. Yeah, we brought her with us and that was her first time in Europe as well and it was great. And we had to bring her here.
Yeah. Are you friends with your crew? Like,
beforehand? I've known Sarah since I was like, I don't know what, 12, 10, 13, something like that.
Hi.
And she went to school for sound and everything. And then she worked at all of our local venues for a while. So she's mixed us since our.
She also worked at Subway.
Yeah, she was a Subway employee.
So she's an artist in multiple.
So she's she made his subs back in the day.
Yeah.
Wow. What were you friends then, or you become friends because of Subway?
Actually, I think that's where we met was Subway.
Classic.
My best friend worked there, and she worked there.
I have a friend that I met at Subway too. That's so strange. Yeah, in my hometown. That's like still my friend, and he was
not
he
still work at Subway.
You know what? Honestly, I don't think so. But I think he managed. Like he was a regional.
All right.
You know what
I'm saying? Let's talk about the job thing. When you guys were first doing your recordings, obviously usually very self-financed. Yep. What jobs were you working during that period in order to put money away for it?
I mean, I still work the same job. I work for a software company at home, and I still do it like while we're grinding right now.
Mm. Yeah.
Where did you work when we first started?
For Breaking Point?
No, for the EP.
Jeez, I've had like 30 different jobs. I'm HIPAA certified as a pharmacy technician. I did that for a little bit. I've worked in call centers. I've worked in food industry. I've done manual labor. You know, it's the pharmacy tech thing is a crazy thing, though. Like, I'm full blown could go work at a pharmacy right now if I wanted to.
You should do it. You should do it right now.
Become a full botanist.
Yeah, no, right. Whatever, yeah. Bro. I'm a legal drug dealer.
So I have a question, if you don't mind, on that. When you're working on the road, right? Because you can work
on. So I say that I'm going to work on the road.
That's what he tells his boss.
I normally work like 1 or 2 days a week at max. Like,
hope he's not listening to this.
Oh, he probably is, because my boss is a huge cruiser. They go on like 5 cruises a year, his family and him. And
so he works every day.
When I told him we got this, he goes, time off approved. Don't worry about it. Totally fine. Totally don't worry about anything. He's like, don't worry about working on the boat. He's like, have fun. He's like, I've been on the breeze 10 times. And I'm like, oh, that's cool.
This guy fucking goes hard.
Yeah.
All right.
I told my job. This is cool. I told him in advance. Well, not this in advance, but like, anytime I tell my job, if they say yes, I'm like, sick. If they say no, I'm like, all right, I'll go find a new job.
are there any members of your band that work consecutively, like, on the road? Or, you know, like, they're doing a remote job or something like that while you guys are working?
No, I'm the only one that does, but, you know, my boss is just very lenient with what I do, so.
He also feels to neglect and say that he's, like, the top in chain at his job.
You fuck hard in the software space.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing that I'll do when I'm, like, on the road is, like, I will work a couple days a week and make, like, half of my salary for the company by then, and then I would... Then they let me keep what I have from there, so
that's okay. It's funny that takes a lot of discipline, because most musicians who go on the road who have a job, maybe that they have to kind of fill in a little time, even if they're on the road, they just don't tend to it, because when they're on the road, they feel they're just a musician.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the same way. Like, but I also am like a workaholic. Like, I don't know. I love money. Who doesn't? Like, so if I can make money while I'm also working and doing what I love that I make a little bit of money at, then it's a win-win.
So let me ask you then, real quick. I got to ask, commerce versus art, what is the thing that rules? Is it
art. 1,000% for us, it's art. Like, we will, like, we'll dump whatever personal money we need to into making the band where we want it to be. And if, like, for instance, if, I don't know, like, if we needed something to be done for the band, like, artistically, like another video or something that we needed, and it wasn't in our budget with our label, that's something that we don't even question. We would just pay for out of our pocket. We don't care.
I think there's like a healthy balance between it, because at the end of the day, like, a band is a business.
Yeah, yes.
But perfect example, you know, we were given 6 days to figure out to come to Shiprock, and we said, we will make it happen no matter what.
Yeah.
And here we are. So it's like, at the end of the day, like, we will chase the dream, like, so to say, you know?
Yeah.
It's not about money. At that point, like, it's about memories and
stuff.
Well,
the fucking Beatles were doing 8 gigs a day in Hamburg when they were breaking, you know? It got to make,
Steve, 8 gigs a day?
We're also the grinders like that. Like, if we could be offered a tour where we don't have a single day off, he'll complain about it, but the rest of us love that.
Yeah. Yeah, you need a
That's
day.
That's a roommate set right there.
The voice gets super thrashed.
Yeah. Sure.
It's not like his hands are going to, like, sound like shit.
This dude's a robot when it comes to vocals. Again, alien.
Yeah.
But yeah, a day off
every day.
So. 6 days off, 6 days on, 1 day off. That'd be fine. Yeah. Right?
What's the hardest tour you've ever? Like, when I say hardest tour, the most grueling. I was the vocalist in my band, and I can remember very specifically the hardest run of dates.
I'd say the tour that I probably had the most trouble on was like our first tour as Afterlife. We did the Sirius XM Octane Accelerator tour.
Great tour.
So, and our first tour, like, House of Blues venues and all this stuff, was all radio shit, and it was in Chicago, and I got the flu. It was a freezing cold tour. Everything was snow every single show, so reacted terribly to that, and I got the flu, and like, I fought to like play shows with the flu, and there was a point to where we had to cancel a couple because I was like
dying,
fucking almost had to go to the hospital.
So we someone one on in Chicago. The boat. Someone on the boat came up to me because they were the security. They worked security at Bottom Lounge where we played that show, and they're like, the first time I ever saw you guys was the night where Tyler ran outside and threw up when we were done.
Out of 104 fever.
Oh my god.
He literally brought it up on the boat, and now you guys asked that question.
What if
so
during
weird.
That period we went out? If when you went out to go get sick. What if they would have got a new vocalist during that 5-minute period? Yeah,
like, dress them up. Wouldn't blame them. I was like, you know what? Get it, boys.
Bring in Todd.
Get it, boys. Yeah, get any guy out of the crowd. Just bring in
what was the original vocalist's name?
Boudinet.
Wait, that's his first name?
Yes. His name was Boudinet, yeah.
Okay.
He's from Haiti.
He didn't have like you just went for it.
Yeah.
Boudinet. I love that.
Yeah.
And he was awesome. He was a grinder, man.
There's not much to say about it. That guy
was awesome. He booked the first tour I ever went on. He booked every date on it. And he was like, we're going to do this. And he worked like 4 jobs at the time.
Drastically different band.
He's like, it doesn't matter. We're going to make it work. And I was like, all right, whatever.
I was just thinking about him being in the back outside.
I
will take my job back.
Spoken to him at all. Oh, yeah, he's like waiting. Yeah. It's like the meme where he's like, yes, please get sick.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I don't even know what that guy's up to now.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in years.
The reason why I ask is a vocalist is really hard.
Yeah.
Any member in a band is really hard to be on. I don't know if this particular tour you had days off, but when you go for 5-6 shows in a row, everything starts to hurt. You know, vocally, your mind, as a guitar player, you got to be fucking in a space where you're just like, this sucks.
I'm going to be honest with you. The more shows I play in a row, the less my body hurts. Like right now, I feel terrible after playing the one show.
Oh, yeah. If
I played like 3 days in a row, then I no longer hurt. It makes no sense.
Is that muscle memory at that point that your body just kind of goes?
I think it's because my body goes back into like moving in ways that I don't normally move. Like even if I go to the gym, like I don't move that way.
Not so many people like get headbang and twirl and stuff with their gym. They're just lifting, right? Yeah,
this
they're not.
Like my neck, I mean, it's a thing, you know.
Yeah.
Facts. Did it when you get to 6 though? At that point, if you haven't had a day off, I know this only because we did a GWAR tour and it was 36 dates.
Straight?
No days off.
That's fucking badass.
Following a fucking in our van and trailer, following a tour bus chasing what would be essentially market money. You know, like when you can find the holes to get them. So we would go. It was awful.
36 straight shows.
No one day. And this is before Brocky passed away. And so he was still on. It was like the last tour that they had done before he passed away. But that whole entire time watching those dudes was because you have to think about the production that they're bringing in.
And I just saw them a couple months ago.
You know, like this is what they wanted. It was their tour. So you couldn't be a little bitch about it. I mean, we were loading in the middle of like January in like fucking knee fucking deep snow.
God.
And that's the only reason why we kept, you know.
We've gotten very lucky to not ever have to deal with like crazy, crazy snow in Afterlife like that.
We played the Leica Storm tour,
definitely was very cold and stuff, but we didn't have to load in through three.
Beaver Dam, Wisconsin was the best shit I've ever had to go through.
You went to Beaver Dam.
Beaver Dam.
I know exactly
Wisconsin.
Where you went.
This venue.
Yeah.
And
it was a great show.
Incredibly profitable night.
Yeah.
But it was so freezing cold.
Oh, it was terrible.
If you guys were to define. Jesus fucking
divine.
Christ.
I think you look
divine.
Define
your sound. Elevator pitch, what would it be?
Jesus Christ.
Pick it.
For defining our sound? Jesus Christ.
This is a question for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm trying to think. That's an elevator, like a quick pitch of it. That's like pretty hard. You could let it rip.
Okay. What I like to think when people ask me this question, I would say I take the honesty of bands like Papa Roach and Linkin Park, like I'm gonna give you this insane, unhinged, like monster of a show, but I'm also gonna be kind of like bearing my soul.
I guess
you know what it's like. You're getting these like really like mold really well together.
I guess in the way that I would say it, if you wanted like a really quick elevator pitch, it would be unsettling musically and emotionally lyrically. Is the band. That's like our goal. Like our heavy songs, like when we wrote Envy, we were like, this song sounds like an anxiety attack. That's like what we want. Mm-hmm. We want you to feel uncomfortable when you're listening to our music. But then if you go back and read the lyrics to the songs, like you're like, oh, there's way more depth here than just like crushing, you know, breakdowns or whatever. Like, you know, there's a lot more depth and substance to it from there as well.
Would I be correct in maybe saying that you're a self-realized emotion, self-realized anxiety attack? You know, because you have to go a little deeper to understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
But on the surface, you know, you see it as an anxiety attack.
Yeah.
It's rushing at you.
That's his description of it. I wouldn't say that, but if that's how he feels, that's how he feels.
I also have anxiety, so I understand.
Yeah. It's the common ground there for you guys.
Yeah. What would be a one word answer? Like, you know, like there's a genre. I hate this thing, but just out of shit.
Oh, new metal for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I never understood that, like, why people don't like that, like that tag, like,
you know why? New metal's fun. I think it was more associated with the people who were listening to it, not the bands. And sometimes the bands did play into it. Korn with the tracksuits and stuff like that. I get it, but they're trying to get on the map. But I think when they started evolving, they started losing that audience and gaining something a little bit more esoteric, a little bit more free thinking.
I mean, I've seen some incredible things from, I guess, the new metal demographic. But like I watched, like, okay, so there's a band called Edema.
Yeah. It's Jonathan Davis's brother or something like that.
I think it's his cousin.
Yeah.
And I watched the video and they're like, yeah, we try to push away from the new metal like
tag.
The tag, yeah. Because it's associated with like really just shitty people. Like the fans.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I don't agree with that because he's like the most welcoming type of people, period.
That's the difference.
You meet like death metal fans.
Yeah.
And you know,
you get on that lamb goat.
That's funny that you bring up Korn for like the new metal, the new metal reference, because like I feel like they're the new metal band that has like evolved into the new sound of new metal, the best out of any other new metal band. Like their newer records, like, you know, they sound more like to the metalcore side of things or what have you, if you want to call it that.
Well,
and it just works for them too, because Jonathan Davis just works over anything.
Well, I think also too, their lifestyles changed. They became sober and they found other things that were these different energy sources.
Yeah,
other
Head than sound just like being, God.
Yeah, like Love and Death, like Head Side Project is one of my favorite bands.
Head, Fieldy, both went, you know, they both got, you know, they went to the Christ.
There was a documentary or interview with them, and like some of the shit they were doing, like the Family Values tour.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I
heard. It was like unhinged.
God, I wish they would bring that tour back. That was
you start to black out too. I would imagine at that moment where you're just these people, friends from the same town, grow up with each other. You're doing this thing, and all of a sudden now you're fucking playing arenas, and people are
probably
losing their fucking mind.
So I watched the Woodstock documentary about Woodstock '99.
Oh yeah,
when Jonathan Davis he says, I don't remember the set at all, and it's like, dude, you had the most iconic set at Woodstock '99. That video, that's another video. I'll put that in the top, like with my fourth grade story. That's another moment where
just
I was
watching
like,
that.
I need to do this.
Yeah.
Was the Woodstock 99 blind video when you look it up on YouTube and the crowd's moving like a fucking ocean.
Yeah.
When they start the song. Oh, that's the coolest.
Yeah, you
shit
can feel it just through the screen. But
yes.
It's funny the evolution, because you could look at the Deftones at first. I was just kind of like, this kind of feels like teenage kind of hardcore stuff. And then second, I'm around the fur, it's like, where the hell does grown-up sound come from? And that's what it is. Yeah. But it's that initial thing. And I think the band that really played into it and like bought into that was that Limp Bizkit.
They own that shit.
That was the worst. So if you had
but
other
also
bands,
the best, because when you're self-aware, then you
see, Fred Durst knew he wasn't supposed to be. I mean, he knew who he was.
Like, I think the record they put out this year is phenomenal, and they did a fantastic job at
evolution.
Honing in on what he's a marketing genius.
Yeah.
He really is.
Dad vibes. I mean,
he's a walking billboard.
Whether you like the band or not, exactly, like from that era or not, now if you see it today, back from that time, you trace it all the way back, you're like, this guy knew exactly what was happening in front of him real
time.
He
knew exactly what he was doing with every step that he made.
The red hat was calculated.
Yeah.
Everything was calculated.
You know who's not going to forget the red hat? Every fucking buddy, because for some reason, it just stuck. So why didn't I fucking
backwards fitted?
Again, when you reference back to the Woodstock 99 doc, when they talk about Limp Bizkit, like, everyone's hating on them. And then the one guy who's, like, the historian of Woodstock is, like, there was a point in 99 where Limp Bizkit was, like, outselling bands like Metallica and stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
it's
insane to think about, like.
Yeah, absolutely. But you, so you guys. Shits on them. So you guys are really, it's like everything. We always go, why are they remaking this great movie? Well, because there's a new audience that hasn't seen the original.
Yeah.
So you guys are like the second wave of new metal. Or like, but new metal now doesn't have that bad tag. I think of groove, rhythm, melody, harmonies. You know, that's what I think of when I think of new metal. I think it's a great audience bouncing. And we had Limp Bizkit play fucking Strip Rock, and they were amazing.
I believe it.
Everyone knew every friggin'
Wes Borland
lyric.
Is the best guitarist
of all time.
He is the most innovative person in metal, and he doesn't even have to be a shredder to be so innovative.
Like, yeah, just, you can take two notes setups. Exactly. You can take two notes and make a fucking world of it.
And make a 5-minute song out of two notes. It's insane.
What I would like to say about what I think we're all aiming towards is with the new metal thing, we've all grown up, right? People, humanity in general has a different understanding of each other and how to treat each other.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that they didn't then, but I wasn't around then to see it. And I just watching those pictures of people hurting each other. And
I think there's a resurgence.
Yeah.
Absolutely right now.
Music can be community and not feel so, to me, is angry towards your brothers and sisters, you know? Yeah. And that's the difference. I think that, to me, is the only
thing. Look, not everyone wants to be a shredder. Some of them just want to play big, heavy, fat riffs.
That's me.
Want to get in the pocket. They want to feel it's enough. They want to feel the music, and like, you know, you can't get that when you're hitting 3,000 notes in a fucking song. Like,
right.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. But
unless you're Marco Cuba from Veil of Maya, because that dude was hitting 3,000 notes in a song and still grooving on stage. It makes no sense.
It's funny because you guys are talking about soundtracks for like games. When you think about, was it the Guitar Hero? Like, without Dragon Force, I mean, look at that, how that blew up.
It's crazy that, like, I've always known of the band Dragon Force, but I always associated with Guitar Hero.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where I first fell in love with Lamb of God, was on Guitar Hero.
It's like the song.
Lamb of God song.
Is it Laid to Rest?
Yes. Thank you. I'm so sorry.
When you see Randy or one of those guys on the ship, tell him.
I would love to.
I think tomorrow.
There's two bucket lists for me: meeting them, and I want to meet Corey Taylor while he's here.
Well, there you go. This is the best opportunity ever.
I want to meet you.
Yeah, where's Corey?
Yeah,
come to
the Lido deck at midnight on Tuesday and watch our set.
He's just saying if you're hearing at any this. Point, I know it's
broadcast
crazy.
He's broadcasting straight.
If any point that Corey Taylor would see us playing, I'd fucking die.
He's just in his room only.
Yeah.
Can you hear me, Corey Taylor? Are you sleeping?
But they're also one of those bands that kind of came in. They were like the pre-second, that first album. They're the pre-second of that, the new, they're new metal.
Yeah, on that sure. First.
And then they went completely deathcore on Iowa. Just like,
I saw when they played rattling. Iowa in full, my very first Knotfest. Yeah. I flew to California to see them play it in San Bernardino. And it was the craziest shit. People were, so like, obviously it's this massive amphitheater and they have like these trees, these massive trees, but they're sectioned off by gates. People knocked the gates over and lit the trees on fire. And it was like, it was just people. But that's exactly what I would expect at a Slipknot show. And that's why it was so amazing.
Yeah.
That specific record in that specific show, that People Equals Shit.
Yeah.
I have like the live recording and you can hear the crowd over like,
I can imagine.
It's insane. Like, just listening to it, you're like, oh my God, the aggression that must have been happening in that moment. Yeah.
Seething.
The first time I saw Slipknot, I was 11 or 13, something like that. And I saw them at the amphitheater where they play now. Anytime they come to South Florida, they play the amphitheater. But they used to do shows on the loading dock, and it was like a 3,000 cap, like 2,000 cap, like space. Mm. And that's the first time I ever saw Slipknot was out there. And then I saw them every other time on the amphitheater stage, like whether it was Ozfest when they were still like blowing up then, or like now. We just saw them, 3 months ago, maybe 2 months ago?
So late last year, it just kind of worked out where I saw Slipknot in West Palm on the Knotfest Roadshow. Then I was in LA and I saw them at the Knotfest with like Bring Me the Horizon.
And then we saw them at Rockville.
And then we played with them at Welcome to Rockville. So 3 weeks in a row, I saw Slipknot. And what's cool is that every single show was different, but also still the same. It never felt old.
It's what you aspired to do at that age. You know, when you've been making records and influencing people.
Yeah.
Like, to hear, I would assume if they heard, you know, peers and also like come ups in that space, that you sounded different and made me feel different 3 weeks in a row.
It was insane.
Like, no, absolutely. Dream. And Corey Taylor has like the most patented line. He used it in there. And anytime I hear that man say crazy motherfuckers, that's it. All I need to hear. I don't even have to see the concert. I hear that. I'm like,
the vocal man.
I got what I needed the whole night.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Hey, we're starting to wind down here. We're on a time thing here. We're good?
Yes.
We got a few minutes?
We have 1:32 on the time.
All right, left.
We might be over.
So you guys got the record. Going to do a lot of festivals. Hopefully get on the road. You're doing this cruise.
Hopefully we are back next year, literally on the
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That'll be a discussion for sure.
Oh, wait, are we? Oh, it's confirmed?
Yeah, we said it. Yeah, oops.
Are you giving us our offer now?
Yeah. The offer's on the table. Shall you sign it?
Literally on the table. So we can't thank you guys enough for, A, coming here and being part of the Sherpa experience, because now you're going to gain all these fans, and they're going to show up in whatever town they live in that you guys are playing, and they're going to bring friends, and it's become a thing. And that's the really cool intrinsic thing about this. I always tell bands, come, and you understand that there is a the residual gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
It's like a ship rocker in every city.
Yeah,
yes, absolutely.
With friends in every city.
They'll bring the colors and the stuff like that, but they will support you because you're now part of something that they love doing.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. And, you know, going to a fest somewhere, that's a cool thing. It's like a one and done. Here it's like you live with each other for like a week, right?
Yeah. I've ran into people having breakfast and dinner, and it's like they're like, oh, you have a seat with us. And it's exactly what people told us before we came on Shiprock. They said, if you ever make it on Shiprock, you're going to go in there, you're going to make friends, you're going to make family, and these people are going to be there for you, whether you're on it the next year or following year at your next show. Like, lifelong friends and family you'll make on this boat.
I also love the little trinkets everyone gives you.
Yeah, I got a bag in my room, and it's just filled with...
You got the dinosaur dick, did you?
Dinosaur dick.
Everything is lucky. Everything is a dick. I don't get it. It's awesome.
Anything to wrap it up, my friend?
No, man. I'm just excited. Did it go off? Perfect timing. Yeah. I'm just excited to meet you guys. Big fan. Being able to switch your lives around for in 6 days to be here is a huge kudos.
It was a no-brainer.
Thank you.
So guys, check out Afterlife. Part of Me is a new album.
Yes, sir.
Check them out on the road. And shit, man, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it, man. We look forward to seeing you guys, just watching your success happen. It's going to be great.
Tuesday, man. We all got to hang out.
That's midnight at the Lido Deck. It's just a part of me.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11. Oh.